We proceed to the sixth case, the United States versus Mendoza.
Mr. Mendoza. This case reminds me when I was a young man going to a movie house to watch cowboy movies and always the government came along, signed a peace treaty, and then they moved the Indians out. And finally the Indian chief said, "White man speak with forked tongue." What do I mean by this? This case starts off where a narcotics detective sends in a policeman to get a man.
I don't want to interrupt your full flight. Didn't your client admit the car that is in question, the search of the car? It was purchased with as a product of drug sales?
The police say that he admitted that. Okay?
There's a dispute over that? Or was it a finding of fact by the court that that's what happened?
Finding of fact by the court?
That he said that the car was purchased as a result of money he had secured from selling drugs. That's the factual problem.
I don't know if Judge Sharp did say that, for the purposes of my argument, I'll concede it.
If you concede that, then it was subject to forfeiture.
Okay.
And if it was forfeited, they would have found the drugs. And where are we going now?
Well, let me just go a little bit here.
we'll pause right there. What is wrong with that analysis so far?
Well, first of all, they asked him to give an oral. He refused to give a signed
consent. I'm not consent. I'm not talking about consent to the search at all. I'm disinterested in the consent aspect of the search of the car. But if the car is subject to forfeiture and is appropriately subject to forfeiture and is seized for that purposes, then the question of consent is moot. It doesn't make any difference. They've got the car. They're going to find it.
Well, he didn't admit that there were drugs in this car.
I know he didn't, but he admitted that he bought the car.
He bought a car. There was another car involved that was out on the street.
Right, and he decided not to fly it down all they could because it had 3 million. So back up. He said that the car was purchased as a result of drug transactions he had performed. That makes the car subject to forfeiture. Well, the statute says so. I mean,
right.
Tell me how much you don't think the statute says that, and I will quietly bag it by bag and leave.
Judge,
you have
to look at the situation.
I'm asking you to look at it my way.
Okay.
If what I said is correct, and tell me if it is not, then if somebody found that he purchased it with drugs, the finding of fact was that he had purchased it with drugs, as they took his word for it, that then they had a right to find it. They did, and they would have found the drugs anyway. Doesn't mean there was no consent, or anything else.
But they didn't act that way. They didn't even attempt to search this truck to in their custody.
Yeah,
this guy was 2 states over being shipped out of the country with no charges.
Obviously, you missed my point.
Okay.
They're going to find the thing. Once they forfeit it, they're going to find it. They're going to search the car. They look through the car.
Well,
they did find it, you see. There's the point. It's their car now, right? It's been forfeited.
I don't believe it was. It's a right to be forfeited by an admission. I don't by an alleged admission by the police. I don't believe that. I don't believe.
It doesn't make it. How logical is whether you do or don't. The judge found his finding of fact that that was what happened, and that's the finding of fact we're stuck with up here.
Well,
you tell me that you don't believe it, but you're not the one that's in charge of believing or disbelieving.
Okay. All right. Let me go on here. In any event, this is brought to the police coming in and talking and lying and asking him to sign a consent to search the house. The house, not the garage, the house. He says, all right, you can come in and search the house. Oh, he doesn't sign anything. They go into the house. They search the house. They don't search the garage. The garage is on the property. It's not often in the twilight. Okay? Subsequently, they say, the government argues that, well, this man doesn't have a right to get consent to search of a house because he didn't prove that he lived there. Well, so he didn't have the power to give consent. Now, the trial judge, Sharp, said he didn't want to get into the issue of forfeiture, as you were saying, Your Honor. He said he didn't want to get into this at all in his reasoning. What he said was that, he had a proprietary interest in the home and the garage, but he didn't prove it. What does that mean? He didn't prove it's his focus, or it's his double talk, or what? He was cooperative, but he never signed a consent to search. He said that when he went to the police station, when he took him to the police station, he didn't give him a statement or anything. It's all the police that say what he said. Now, the car, where the drugs is found, is seized after this man leaves the scene and is taken away. It is seized by another officer. On the basis that the coding for the premises could include, could possibly include a garage officer. Even though he was with him, searched the house. The man that got into the house on a loose. They're now start talking to him. He's an immigrant, asking bad questions, tell him to sign here, and I'm going in. Well, have we come down to the police and go on any street that we live, and knock and talk, and ask if you have weapons and drugs, if you're under arrest, if he does find it? I mean, I find that wrong. I find that should be a strict instruction of what police power is and what police power is not. I mean, what would stop, even in Germany, they might have had a constitution. Let's say they wanted to go down the street, and in those days, they did not have a search. They took neighborhoods away of Jewish people. That's what this whole consensus board to. What is this knock and talk? Now,
was this before Judge Moody?
No.
It was Judge Sharp?
It was Judge Sharp, and I heard the motion to suppress.
Okay, well, the police said Moody, that's why. But in the motion to suppress, the police officers testified. The defendant did not.
That's correct.
So, just to follow a little bit on what my colleague just bowed, what we have is, and I understand what it means with perhaps the testimony as it unfolded from the police, and perhaps your understanding of what you believe occurred as a result of conversations, and I'm not getting into them, with your client, but we have the findings of a district judge based solely on the acceptance of the credibility of the officers. It is not our role to get behind that, because that's what the trial is. So these versions of events that it seems to me in question occurred, right, in the manner in which that the police testified, had been accepted by the trial judge.
Are you tracking where I'm coming from?
I'm tracking. But what the trial judge said, Judge Sharp said, as opposed to what Judge Bowers said, that he didn't want to get into whether this was a proper forfeiture or not. He recognized that. He recognized that. Okay, if it looks like a duck and acts like a duck, he answered the door and he lives there. He lives there. Okay, now they're coming to me. They have a form, a blank form,
which the officer said he refused to sign. Right?
That's correct.
So, I mean, it isn't as if...
they're honest about that, I guess. That he gave him permission to search the house.
Right.
Now, in the form, that says privileges or premises, which can't be interpreted as...
The form is in question, is it? Because he didn't sign the form.
He didn't sign the form.
So what we have
one was allegedly read to him. Okay?
Well, it says residence, doesn't it?
It says residence.
And then it also says premises.
And it says premises.
Right.
And so this foreigner, who's not supposed to understand the English, is supposed to interpret premises of that, meaning everything on the property.
Your time is expired, I'm going to give you a minute for rebuttal.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Hayes.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Kenneth Hayes on behalf of the United States. The suppression hearing occurred before Judge Sharp. He then transferred the case to Judge Moody. Judge Moody heard the trial. That's the progress there.
Okay.
I respectfully disagree that the use of a knock and talk as an investigative technique is improper. As it was developed at the hearing, Corporal Buford believed that there was some narcotics activity going on at this address, 501 Oakside. Went there because of that, he didn't just randomly walk up to the house. Judge Sharp, I don't believe, wanted to address the propriety of the forfeiture, not because he felt that
wasn't before
not important, it wasn't before him. I think at some point he also used the phrase red herring, and I think that's what it was.
The issue of forfeiture was not before him, if I recall correctly.
That is exactly.
And so I consider it as...
Exactly. I think the real question which the Court has to address and the question that's presented on the briefs is whether or not under a totality of the circumstances a reasonable person would have interpreted the exchange between Buford and Mendoza as including the search of the garage. And I think that's a fair question. And the Court might note that in the initial motion to suppress filed by the defense, as well as my initial response to it, the government's initial response, the scope of the consent was not the issue that was addressed. It was really more of a voluntariness question. As the hearing played out, it became clear, at least to me, that Judge Sharp was more concerned, frankly, about the scope of the consent, and that kind of became the issue, if you will. The circumstances that I point to in the brief and would call this Court's attention to now are, first, the fact that the scope was very broad. When the conversation occurred between Mendoza and Buford, it was an ongoing conversation. It started outside, it came inside. As they were actually walking into the house, the form was read to him, the one he refused to sign. So we have a series of words, premises, residence, and home, that the two of them used. Us lawyers, we use, all of us are very well trained, we use these terms very carefully when we use them.
Some of us are better trained than others, yeah, right.
True. And I'm probably in the group not well trained, but I'm doing my best.
Never confess.
Thank you. That's what my wife told me this morning as we were driving here and I was practicing. She's a public defender in state court, so she's my best counterpart to argue with me on these things. The words were used interchangeably by two people who are not well-trained on what these words mean. Mr. Mendoza, English was not his native language. No argument about that, of course. Buford, a police officer, high school education. I'm sorry, I don't know what was in there. That was not in the record, but I can assure you he's not well-trained. They were using these terms interchangeably. There was no effort by Mr. Mendoza to limit the scope of the consent. There was no, and there were opportunities to do so. When Mendoza was sitting in the car, in the police car, after he'd been arrested, and Buford's talking to him, Buford asked him, do you want to talk some more about this? He said yes. He said you're going to be taken to the police station. There was further discussion about the vehicle at that point, the Tahoe, and how the Tahoe was something that he had purchased with drug money. And there was discussion by Mr. Mendoza that he had regularly gone back and forth between Washington and other places delivering drugs. So he had an opportunity at that point to say, wait a minute, I don't want you to search the garage, or anything, even a hint, and he didn't do that.
Is this an attached garage?
Finally, one point I'd like to respond to from the appellant's reply brief. Mr. Unger makes a point that based upon the fact that that he didn't sign the consent form and that he used the term home, that Mendoza used the term home, that meant it was limited to the house. I mean, I think that's what he's saying, the four walls of the house. And I respectfully disagree. And part of the reason I say that is that even in Mr. Mendoza's counsel's brief, he says on page 22 that Mr. Mendoza's garage, though unattached, was part of his home. Even us lawyers are maybe confused about what those exact terms mean. So it seems to me that given all of those circumstances that the consent was broad enough to include the unattached garage, unless there are further questions. Thank you.
In your home.
There should be a strict construction of police power. When they're coming without a warrant, looking for crimes, and they come to your home, there should be a strict construction of police power before something is moved on. There's no warrant here, justices. There's nothing here except the police coming to your home.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hunter. Mr. Hayes, the case is taken under advisement, and the court is in recess.